We were talking while waiting for everybody to get here, and today's subject fits very well with the question that was asked. I have a service person in my office. I'm one of the members of the family. It's my office. Our name is on the door, you know, Raymond and Company. And I asked them to do something. And besides the service being subpar, the response was a little, as I say in Baruch, bar chutzpedik, was a little bit brazen and ornery and gall and rude. And me, being one of the, I guess, the bosses, I'm wondering how tough should I be and how should I come back to this person? I mean, should I kill her or what? This was a question that was asked, not in those terms, and not in those terms, but I tried to make it colorful because people in Tape Land don't understand where we're sitting and they can't see us. And it's, I guess, not coincidental that one of my examples in today's little talk was to bring up the case of a service person who doesn't serve you well. Why? Because there's an incident that takes place in the Torah. It's called the story of Yehuda and Tamar, which until about 7th or 8th grade they skip because they can't explain how a daughter-in-law had relations with a father-in-law and she got pregnant and she's having babies. It's hard to explain at a young age. So when we get to 7th or 8th grade, maybe they gloss over it. And that was when I went to school. Now they probably have movies of it. Because kids are so into video and everything. But it's funny. The lesson learned from it is one of the most amazing lessons in all the Torah.
Yehuda was honest?
No.
When he was approached and he admitted it right away?
He admitted right away is important. What about her approach to the problem? Here's the problem. She's pregnant with twins. She knows it. She has Ruach HaKodesh. She has some kind of spiritual level where she understands that the children in her womb are potentially the house of David, the house of Malchut, royalty, sovereignty in the Jewish people, which is the people of the earth. The supreme people, the supreme royalty. That's what's in her womb right now. She knows he's the man. He's a very respected son of Yaakov Avinu. On the Beit Din that's judging her for immorality sit some of the greatest people of the generation. And it's a public scene because this is a pretty coarse celeb. This is a big trial. And everybody's around and they decide she's guilty. And the punishment will be death by fire, to be burned. She's considered a bat kohen who turns to immorality and does things she's not supposed to do with the wrong men, is taken to be burned. She's being taken out, the pasuk says, he mutzet, she's being taken out. V'hi shalechal chamiya lemor, she sends to her father-in-law, who still remains unknown to the public as the perpetrator, the father of these children, his stick, which has, in those days everything was very identifiable. He was a very royal family. They were well-known people, and a person of honor would have a walking stick that was identifiable as his. And so other personal objects, which he gave her to hold as security until he paid for her services, because he thought she was a woman of the night, which is another class. How could he even do such a thing? But I don't want that to be today's subject. And she tells him, whoever these belong to is the perpetrator. She sends it to the court. He's on the court. She says, "This is, if you can identify these, you know who did it." One of the commentators called Baalei Tosafot says the word mutzit, being taken out, is spelled in the Torah without an aleph. Because mutzit without an aleph means kindle, when you kindle a fire. Vatzit Esh. She was right by the fire she's supposed to burn in, and she's still very cool. I will not tell.
She's still pregnant at that time.
She's pregnant. She knows the house of David goes up in flames with her. David HaMelech doesn't get born. It's all gone to the wayside. This is the intent. All of history is going to change if I don't say a word. Yet I have a problem. What's my problem? If I open my mouth, Yehuda, my father-in-law, will be embarrassed. He's a big man. He's a public figure. And if this scandal should hit the newspapers, which it's going to, because this is a very public scene, they're burning a woman in fire because she was unfaithful or immoral. But if I open my mouth, he will be embarrassed. And so she's silent. Now, as pointed out before, he did a great thing. He admitted publicly what he did. That's one of the great acts here. But to go to the fire and be ready to be thrown in as it blazes in front of you is also very amazing. And why? Not for personal reasons, not to hurt somebody else. From here, the rabbis of the Gemara, the Talmud, tell us an amazing principle. You know, the Torah tells us, v'chai b'hem. You have to live by the laws of the Torah. V'al yamut b'hem. Shouldn't die by them. If a person would come and threaten a person with death, eat this taref or die, do this sin or die, the person has to keep on their mind, the Torah wants me to live, I'm supposed to do this sin and save my life. Now this is under certain circumstances, it can't be during certain other circumstances. I want to give you a whole book of halakha here. But that's the basic idea, except for three sins. There were three sins, which is Avodah Zarah, idol worship, Shefichut Damim, murder, and Gilui Arot, immorality, be with this woman you're not allowed to be with, etc. That a person, Yehareg Ba'al Ya'avor. For those three, should be killed and not violate the Torah. Even the Torah says live by it.
The three again are?
Idol worship.
Idol worship, or to kill someone.
Right. If I say, kill this guy, and I'll save you, you can't kill the guy.
But if it's in self-defense,
it's immorality. Is a very important term.
Immorality means that to be one of the relationships that the Torah tells you can't have. Which means, for example, a man being with another man's wife. Okay, that's a simple case that everybody's aware of. And thank God most people keep away from other people's wives. So that's the picture. Comes the Gemara and says, amazing thing, from this little story that we just told. Noach lo le'adam, she'yapir atzmo le'kivshan ha'esh, ve'lo yalbin p'nei chavero barabim. It's preferred for a person to throw themselves into a fiery furnace rather than embarrass their friend publicly.
That's the fourth thing.
Ah, very good. So Tosafot, this man's got a sharp mind. This guy's got to hand it to him. The Gemara just says that, and the Baalei Tosafot, who are Rashi's grandchildren, they say, wait a minute. There's a list all over the Gemara of three things. This is number four. And they say it's true, it's number four. It's not on the list, because it's not written b'ferush in the Torah. It's not written in the Torah. Don't kill yourself rather than embarrass. We only learn it from a lesson. So when they give you the list is things written in the Torah. This is not written. This is we learn from an incident. Therefore, there really are four things. And this is the fourth thing. Don't embarrass somebody publicly. Now when it says chavero, it doesn't mean only your friend. It means a person. Now, there's a famous book called Menorat HaMaor, and he writes in there A person who's able to avoid this, making another person's face red than white, because that's why it's called like spilling blood. Because when you embarrass somebody, first they turn red, and then the red goes away and they turn white. And that's
what
like,
if you embarrass them and they don't turn red?
Now you're getting to halakha. I'm going to tell you something. It doesn't go by skin color. It goes by the level of embarrassment. That's an image, an imagery. But it's true, there is a degree. There's certain things that are justified, not justified. But you do have to be sensitive to another person's sensitivity. Now, if a person is ridiculously embarrassed by everything that happens, maybe over there, just being in a normal way of life, doing things normally, they get embarrassed. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, let's go back to our service person. I go into a restaurant, and there's a person there working for a living called a waiter or a waitress. And they're taking too long to bring me what I want. I'm a paying customer. This place is overpriced anyhow. In fact, I come here for the service. The service and the decor, the atmosphere. Otherwise, I can have a piece of fish home for about $4. What am I paying? 24 or 30? I want all the trappings, the candles on the table, and the this and the that. And if anybody understands the special, let me know. I always order from the menu. I never got to see the guy saying, "Do nice special." Give me the regular fish. Oh, okay, this one here, number three, because you know what he's saying. But if the service is below par, people react differently. Do you have the right to embarrass the person because they're not doing their job right? Or maybe they're trying their best, but they're just not as capable as some other people. Is that the solution? To embarrass them? Or is there a way to do it without embarrassing? And maybe that's what the Torah wants from us? You know, there's many stories that can be brought in this case of not embarrassing. There's one brought in the Gemara about a rabbi and his wife who did an amazing chesed, amazing kindness. They used to go and give aniyim, poor people, envelopes and little bags. A bag of grocery or an envelope with money anonymously. They get up early in the morning, I guess before the newspaper delivery guy, and they go and do it. Go around town and leave these packages of food and money by aniyim's house, by poor people's houses. One day, one of the aniyim, one of the poor, became curious. What's the story here? Yeah, this is a famous story. The poor guy says, "Tomorrow, when I hear the rustling out in the morning, I'm going to open the door quickly. I'm going to catch him. See who it is. I'm going to thank the person." The rabbi and his wife heard the hand go on the doorknob from the inside. They turned and started to run. Well, the ani said, "I'm going to catch them anyhow." Now he goes out in his pajamas and he starts running. So he's running after them and they're running down the street. They duck into a bakery. And they don't see anywhere to hide except the oven. The rabbi remembers this gambit. The ani is chasing them to see who they are. And they don't want him to see because they assume if he sees who I am, he'll be embarrassed that I'm supporting him. So they jumped into the oven, the one place he wouldn't look.
And died?
Willing to die rather than embarrass the person. And this happened. A miracle happened. The rabbi didn't die, neither did his wife. But there was one difference. A little sidelight to the story. Have you nothing to do with that? No. He got a very nice tattoo. His legs became burnt. And he wasn't able to stand on the floor of the oven. So he stood on his wife's feet because she seemed to be in no pain at all. So the rabbi, when they got out of there, told his wife, "There's one thing I don't understand. You and I both jumped in. How come my legs burned and yours didn't?" She said, "I don't know for sure, but I can guess. The chesed you do is you give them money. I give them prepared food that they could eat right away. That's a much bigger zechut. So I had the zechut of not burning, and therefore you were able to stand on my feet and not burn any further than you did. But the point is what? Here he hears, Noach lo le'adam, it's better, preferred for a person to throw themselves into a fiery furnace rather than embarrass another person. He's doing a mitzvah, but he feels the side effect of his mitzvah will be the recipient of his kindness, will be embarrassed, and therefore, I'm not going to embarrass him, I'll jump into the furnace. That's an amazing concept. It's also an amazing person who took the words of Chazal about rabbis and sages 100% as fact. But he was avoiding murder. In his eyes, it's murder. Because that's what Yalbin Pene Chavero means. It means you can't whiten the face or redden the face, because that's what it's like when somebody spills blood. First they turn red, and then they turn white. And that's the phrase and expression that the rabbis use. And he said, if I'm going to kill somebody, I'd rather kill myself. Just like I'm not allowed to kill another person, I can't embarrass another person. And this, unfortunately, is something that, in this generation, don't hold water. You know, if you took out, I don't know, it's near the end of the year now. Their year, not our year. We're at the very head of our year.
No, actually, we call it the fiscal.
Fiscal year. Okay, let's call it the end of the fiscal year. The end of the fiscal year is here. And you have a lot of lists of bests and biggest and most. The top news stories, the top movies, the top music. Everybody's making lists, the best dressed. There's going to be people who earn the most for the year. And in this country in particular, when we look at who earned the most money, you'll see there's a few people that, because they got a big mouth and they know how to embarrass people with a sharp tongue, they make a lot of money. Some of them are on late night Toeva TV. Some people are on the radio. But if you could sit down, a respected dignitary or famous person or personality, and you could sit on a couch next to them or at a desk and make them look totally ridiculous, you make a lot of money in this country. More than the average guy. If you're a person who plays tennis well or basketball well to earn millions of dollars, if you have a sharp tongue that you can embarrass the other player or the coach or the referee, you make more money. It's looked at as not being bad, but being quick, bright, sharp. And it earns people Gehinam. Because it tells you here, better to fall into a fiery furnace. Now you might think, you know, there's another side to this. In the same parasha that has the story of Tamar, fantastic week, you have the story of Yosef and the wife of Potiphar. Yosef is sold by his brothers. He gets to Egypt. He's sold to a person who's a big officer in the government. His wife is a beautiful woman. She stops on 34th and 6th on the corner. She has all the fancy stuff from The Secret over here. And she looks really good. And she decides, he's such a good looking young man, I want him. And she tries day in, day out to seduce him. But he feels so loyal to his boss and so fearful of God, he doesn't want to do it. Then, of course, at the scene with...
I thought she was a queen.
She was, no, she was not. Her husband was an officer in the government. Sara Tabachim, it says. Either he was the top executioner or he was head of the commissary. Tabachim means butcher. So was he really a butcher or was he a butcher? But he wasn't the king. The king was Paro. Because in the next parasha, he stands before Paro. Paro is the emperor and the king. So now, that story that we're all familiar with has a very unusual twist. When they look for her motive, a lofty motive far beyond the attraction of physical to a man and a woman, they say, you know, she was behaving l'shem shamayim. She was doing it with a spiritual, lofty intent. What? She had astrologers, and she saw through astrologers that great things would come from him and her, her family and his family. And astrology in those days was not opening up the newspaper and seeing, you know, oh, what song are you? Hey, good, yeah, tomorrow you should, you know, buy a lottery ticket because you're going to win. Oh, you're going to meet somebody dark and handsome and interesting. No, astrology was really based on the powers of the stars and the creation that Hashem put in. If you could figure it out, you'll know certain luck, certain things that might be able to be predicted. So her astrologers in Egypt, they had the best ones. They predicted the birth of Moshe. They predicted a lot of things. So it was legitimate. Told her great things are going to come from you and him. So she tried to seduce him to bring this to fruition. She had another intention. And she was a little bit of a lowlife. So it turned out bad. When he turned her down, she screams. She's violated. She screams. Screaming and accusing. She lies. He goes to jail. That's the end of the story. What's Halashem Shemayim? The rabbis even ask, why is the story of this next to the story of Tamar? They say, because they were both L'Shem Shemayim. Tamar, L'Shem Shemayim, for the sake of heaven, was not going to snitch on her father-in-law. And rather than embarrass him, she was one willing to give up her life. Hashem Shemayim. The twins are the kings. All that we said? No. Potiphar's wife, Hashem Shemayim. The astrologers told me great things are going to come from me and him. What went wrong with her that was right with the other? The difference is, it's one thing to say I want to do things Hashem Shemayim. But if your character traits are not built in positives, you can take a left turn at the corner and end up in Gehinnom instead of heaven. For example, we have a mitzvah. Mitzvah is to hear the parasha Zachor Asher Asah Lecha Amalek. We read it right before Purim. It comes up again in the summer for makeup and Devarim, because that's where it is. And the question becomes, how does the whole kahal, the whole community, keep that mitzvah? How do they do it? Well, the man goes up and he reads it for them. And in most shuls, they say, listen, this is a mitzvah taseh doraita, this is a very important mitzvah, please pay attention, the guy reading is going to be fulfilling it for you, you have to have in mind, and then he reads. And they send up the rabbi or somebody who reads very well to read those three or four pesukim very, very precisely and loud and clear.
I missed that part, I was yawning.
Okay, there's a thing called Parashat Zachor. Okay. Now, Parashat Zachor has to be read competently, loudly, and by a gadol. What's a gadol? Someone who's 13 in a day, under bar mitzvah, and the oraita, a person also has to have, there's a machlog gemar, if you reach 13 in a day, it's fine, but you also have to have what they call mature hair. The body hairs that a male grows when he becomes a man, all over his body. Now, most laws, we assume that when the boy reaches that age, he's fine. Unless there's a certain something about him that makes us think not. Otherwise, we assume it's there. When it comes to Parashat Zachor, however, one time, a man was reading. He was a young boy. He was 13 years old. He was reading. He didn't look like he had a beard and probably didn't have hair anywhere else. And so somebody got excited and said, how are we letting this guy read? He's no good for us. We're an important kahal and he's reading. Kid turned red, and the kid turned white. The rabbi called him over and said, you're doing a mitzvah or you're doing murder? Are we such a kahal that we can contribute to murder? The stringency of knowing for sure, doing a body check as they say, that this boy is 13 and he does have mature hairs, is enough to embarrass the boy? So you want to do it the mitzvah at the expense of somebody else's life? That's not L'Shem Shemayim. And that was the difference between Tamar, who was willing to give up her life, L'Shem Shemayim, And Potiphar's wife, who when it went wrong, screams rape. The midot of the person, the character traits of the person, is what contributes to the ability to keep this very, very important principle of the Torah. I know of several incidents firsthand where a person's life was changed by this type of behavior. A person tried to come to shul. He wasn't brought up that way. His father was a good for nothing, didn't bring him up the right way. And he had certain contact with certain friends who were good people. They were shul goers. He said, "Why don't you come to shul with me? Got a good seat, sit with us. I don't know how to pray." So good. "No, we'll show you. We got the English shidur. We'll show you how to do it. But I don't know." I said, "Come, come." And the guy starts coming. He starts going to classes. He enjoys it. He's starting to feel like a person. And one day, it's the yahrzeit of his father. His father's yahrzeit. So the gabbai, the one who's the misadeh, we call it, the one who sends the people up to the Torah, comes over and gives him an aliyah, a very important aliyah. "That's his father's yahrzeit, let me give it to him." In Israel, they like mashlim, because you have the Kaddish. In the Sephardic community in Brooklyn, most of the Syrian-based people, the Chalabiyah, like maftir, because you get the extra berachot when you say the haftarah. Everything's good for the elevation of the soul of the father. The guy goes up. All of a sudden, somebody very loudly says, "They're giving him this aliyah? This guy's father was a good for nothing, da da da, you don't know." And he's speaking loudly to the guy sitting next to him. The young man went up to the Torah, and he wanted to go down from the Torah. And he got embarrassed. And he never came back to shul. What would his children have been? What would his family be like? How many mitzvot would he would have done? Ended right there. Why? This man felt, why is he getting? He's doing it, he thinks, l'shem shamayim. It's not kavod for this kahal, for this congregation, have that type of person get this so important aliyah. What are you talking about? You killed him. You killed him, l'shem shamayim? That's Potiphar's wife as opposed to Tamar. And where does it come from? A lack of midot. A lack of good sense and good feeling in your heart. A lack of character to understand, sometimes I want to say something. Sometimes I'm correct in saying something. But that doesn't make it the right thing to say at that time. Because if someone else will be hurt by your pronouncements, then it's time to say, shh, another time, another place. Not now, not here. It's not the right thing to say now. And that's why our sages were so strict and said, you know, this is not a regular sin that fits the regular category. This could kill a person. And if the Torah told us outright, killing a person, you or him, you go first. You, if you're threatened with death to kill somebody else, you just sit still and let the guy blow your brains out. Because of it. How about a different situation? How far does this go? How far does it go? Sometimes it's me or him. If he's not embarrassed, I'll be embarrassed. I'm a guy, he's a guy. You look in Shamayim, I'm a Neshama, he's a Neshama. 1-to-1. Why should I suffer? It's a story told by one of the great rabbis in Yerushalayim. His name was Rabbi Braverman. Zecher Tzaddik Livracha. He had a yeshiva called Me'ah Shalim.
After the city?
After the area of the city, yeah. Somebody made an accusation in front of a lot of other people to Rosh Yeshiva. You know what you guys did? And he started making accusations about, I think, the handling of the money. You guys are money laundering, or you're not paying your taxes, or you're doing that. Something, it's embarrassing for Yeshiva to be involved in that type of scandalous behavior when it came to finances. And the rabbi sat there, and now that the person saw that he didn't react, and he didn't give him ala rasa, as we said, he didn't give it back to him on his head, and he absorbed all the abuse, the guy got more abusive. He's trying to rile him up, and it's not working. Well, when this guy walked away, the students of the rabbi were a little embarrassed. They said, Rabbi, how could you let this man do this to you? How? Quiet. And it's not only your kavod, it's the kavod of the yeshiva. And it's not only the kavod of the yeshiva, the respect for the yeshiva. You represent Torah. And this guy's mouthing off and you're sitting there? What's up? Teach us. They didn't ask at him. Objecting to him, they want to learn. He says, don't you understand? If I say, which is true, I don't know the details. I don't know what you're talking about. And he starts quoting all these little incidents that he thinks happened with the yeshiva. You know who they're going to start to blame? The bookkeeper. The one who handles the money. The one who handles the checks. The one who handles, maybe the Rosh Yeshiva, the CEO don't know everything, but the CFO does. He's the one doing it. Could I cause him embarrassment to save myself? I'd rather sit and let everybody think I did it, and it's me, and it's my fault, rather than even cause an auxiliary hurt to somebody else. Because if they don't blame me, I'll tell you exactly when this happens. Simple case. Two people in a room. Somebody spills a drink on the hostess's new beige rug. I was going to say white, but in this community everything's beige. A new beautiful beige carpet. Somebody spills a nice cranberry juice. The hostess walks in and a look of shock on her face. Bert, how could you do that? Why weren't you careful? Oh, I didn't do it, he did. Right? The first reaction is, I didn't do it. Harry did it. You know Bert and Harry. Harry did it. Not this one. The other guy. What happens to the other guy? Whether he did it or not, his face is going to turn purple. Even if it's true, he's going to be embarrassed. The host is new carpet. What did I do? She thought it was me. To save myself, I embarrass him. Is that permitted? Noach lo la'adam. It's better for a person. It's starting to come clear now what we're talking about today. Is your question starting to get answered? Here's a person answered me in a way I didn't like. I'm going to walk into the office where they sit. There's going to be four other people. And I'm going to blast them. Who do you think you are? You know, something you, pop, 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 pop. The person will turn red and white. You were right that they were out of line. You were right that they never should have said that. But now when you embarrass them in front of others, you didn't handle it right. You can accomplish the same thing privately as publicly. Patiently as angrily. Because you're playing with murder. And when you're playing with murder, which is a capital offense, the fourth capital offense in the Torah, the one that's not written, but everybody should know, you're really in trouble.
Public is considered one other person besides the president of Arsene or two other people?
That's halakha. I don't want to discuss halakha now. I want to discuss the principle. It's a good question. I like the question. Sometimes it needs to. Sometimes one is enough. I give you a better one. There's a great rabbi. His name was Rabbi Natan Zvi Finkel. They call him the Saba from Slobodka. The famous place that Rabbi Mila Alav Hashalom always used to refer to, the great yeshiva of Europe called Slobodka, where Musar and ethics and character was a big deal to them. And Saba was the head. One day he gets up and he starts to pray as the Chazan, Shaliach Sibur. I think it was Mincha, actually, the story. Yes, Mincha. And he gets up and he has trouble getting through Ashrei. He makes one or two mistakes. He gets to the Chazara. He starts making a couple of mistakes. The people are, what's going on here? Saba. He's the man. Can't read so good. He wasn't Chazan so many times, but still, you know, he's the man. When he came down and finished, he didn't say anything. Afterwards, the reason became known. There was a person who was an Avel that week. And that Avel had trouble praying. But since they give the kavod to the Avel for the sake of the Ilui Nishmat, the father, to be a Chazan, he took it for the sake of his father's neshama. Yet, he wasn't proficient in reading. And people would squirm in their seats a little bit, or he's a little too slow. You know what happens in shul. I mean, this is not uncommon, that the Chazan is not to the liking of certain people in the audience. They get used to the fastest guy, the quickest guy, the guy who pronounces the word the best. And when somebody less than that gets up there, Rabbi Finkel revealed privately that he did attend one of the services that this man conducted. And he saw what the other people, you know, what their reaction was. And he knew that this man would have to again get up and pray. And if he's going to get up and pray the way he prayed, and everybody else in the community is good, eventually he's going to get to a point of embarrassment. He's going to feel the embarrassment, or somebody's going to embarrass him. So what did he do? I'll get up, and I won't read so well. So now, who can say anything about this guy if the Saba from Slobodka doesn't read so good either? To prevent embarrassment to somebody else, he was willing to embarrass himself. That's the next level. Because a lot of times,
how was he going to embarrass himself?
Because he didn't read properly. Instead of reading the way a Saba, a Rosh Yeshiva should read, he read more like a guy who had trouble getting through school. And a man of his stature, reading improperly, sometimes it happens. You know what happens? Sometimes a man goes up, he comes, we don't know him, he wants to become known, he gets up and he tries to read his own Aliyah in the Torah, and he doesn't read so well. And a couple of people in the crowd said, this guy was better off, he didn't read. He should let the Chazan read. Because it's embarrassing when you're not, when you're supposed to be able to do something and you can't. What do you mean? You? I can't read. You can't read? That kind of embarrassment. So now but the point of the story is not what was his proficiency or lack of it. That he realized, I can save another embarrassment by embarrassing myself. And I'm willing to sacrifice for the sake of another self-respect. This one is amazing. A rabbi called...
You embarrass yourself. That's not considered the same?
No. especially if it was done.
Even if he turned red?
In other words, if no, you're not killing. You're not. It's not suicide. I'll tell you in a minute. Because you're seeing, here's the beauty of this chidush, of this whole chidush. Suicide in Jewish law is illegal. A person is not allowed to kill himself. It's one of the worst things a person can do. And yet we see a person should be willing to be thrown into a fiery furnace, which is suicide, almost. Allow yourself to be killed, or jump into a fiery furnace, rather than kill, like the rabbi did in the beginning of the class. So we see the seriousness as it overrides one of the biggest isurim of the Torah. So this rabbi, Israel Chaim Kaplan, who was a son-in-law of the Mashkiach from near Rabbi Leibovich, he was sitting in the Beit Midrash and he was crying. He came over, this Rabbi Waxman, and asked Rabbi Kaplan, "Why are you crying?" He was so wrapped up in his tears, he couldn't stop. And he couldn't answer. That only made the asker, the questioner, a little more curious. So he persisted. And finally he told him, "Bring me a Masechet Berachot." So he brings him the tractate of Berachot from the Gemara. And he opens up to page 43, Mem Gimel, and he shows him what it says. Noach lo la'adam she'apil atmo tov la'anev she'imeh ha'barabim. And then he opens up, Mabba Metzia, kol ha'mapin b'neich ha'baro barabim. Anybody who whitens the face of his friend publicly, ki'ilu shaveh v'em, as if he's murdering. He says, "Imagine how I would react," he answered, "if I came to the Beit Midrash and I saw somebody walk in," which has happened in Beit Midrash, unfortunately, in Israel, "I saw a terrorist walk in and murder somebody. How would I react? I would break down and cry. I walked in here and I saw somebody embarrass somebody. And I can't stop crying." To him, this principle is real. To us, it's a bunch of stories. That's the problem. And you know, I like to be practical. I love to be practical. I like to take the lessons of Torah and apply them to our real life. We are so desensitized. We're so into sketching. We're so into the sharp barb, the quick comeback for a comment. We're so into entertainment that's based on insult, that we become numb to the fact that it's murder. Just joking. Just having fun. Just sketching. In fact, I was with a family gathering on the weekend, and one of the little, it's got to be about two, they asked her a question, she answered, they asked her a question, she answered, and then the third one she got wrong. So they said, "Well, that's not the answer." And she turned around and said, "I was just sketching." And I said, "Look, at 2 years old, she hears the word sketch so much, she even knew what it meant. I'm wrong, I'm just sketching. You might even catch yourself doing something wrong. I'm just sketching." I can only tell you that we have to find a new level. We have to find a new level of mesirut nefesh, of self-sacrifice, when it comes to this law. We have to find a new level of understanding, I don't come first. If I spilled it, I can't say the other one did it. And if I didn't spill it, maybe I should say I did, to save the other person the embarrassment. When I'm in a situation, a group of friends, and I'm not big enough to be top dog. I should try to be better, not rip somebody else down so that I'm higher. The cause of this is really a weakness in character. When I feel I'm not good enough, and there's somebody better than me right there, or who I feel is better than me, the easiest way for me to be top dog is not to climb over them, pull them down. It's a source of lashon hara. It's a source of embarrassing. It's a source of sketchy. If a dignified person falls, everybody in the room is more dignified. Not by being more dignified, but higher than the one sitting on the floor in embarrassment. That's the source of this, what the Torah calls evil in a human character. And that's why when I walked in here today and somebody was about to shamble somebody else, I said it'd be easier and better if you didn't shamble them, but you got what you want done another way. And he said, why? And I said, let's have a class and I'll tell you. You have your answer now. Because if you embarrass that person who did whatever they did wrong at 105 instead of 205, that hour would have been an hour that you can't make up for. Because you might have committed murder. And murder is not excusable in any court of law, especially the one in Shamayim. Remember, Tamar was willing to give up the mother of royalty, being the mother of the royalty of David HaMelech and Mashiach, so the twin she had, rather than embarrass her father-in-law.
So, was it considered that she embarrassed him?
No, because she wouldn't tell. She wouldn't tell. No, he admitted.
No, like you said, everybody has a sign that everybody knows of. So anybody.
I'm saying it was distinctive. It was distinctive. It wasn't recognized. He had to. He knew it was his. That's what I meant by it. It's like it wasn't. You go to Walmart and you buy any one of 500 canes on the rack. He knew his cane. I didn't mean that everybody else knew his cane. He would know his cane. Now I just want to tell you one last story that really. Has been told over, but it's also very, very impacting to get the lesson across. There was a great rabbi called Maharil Diskin. And every Motzei Shabbat, people come to his house, an elderly rabbi, great rabbi, to hear a shiur. And one week, unfortunately, the tea he needed for his health, with a little extra sugar, because he had a low sugar and he always needed sugar. The cook in the kitchen mixed up the sugar with the salt and put in, instead of 3 or 4 spoons of sugar, 3 or 4 spoons of salt in the rabbi's tea. And the rabbi had a lot of people there and he's giving the shiur and he says the beracha and he takes a sip. And he continues to drink, not every sip in a row, but whatever he would normally do, with no indication that this was very, 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 very extremely salty tea. Not only that, he had a high salt blood content, and it was dangerous for him to drink salt. His wife was one of those that cooked with no taste, no salt whatsoever. Well, she went into the kitchen, and she saw that the person serving the tea to everybody had made the mistake and was about to put salt in somebody else's tea. And she ran out to the rabbi and said, Rabbi! She saw he's drinking and she was quiet. Afterwards she asked, Rabbi, how could you drink all the tea and let it finish without indicating something was wrong? He said, if I indicated that somebody in the kitchen put salt instead of sugar, there would have been a bunch of laughing, and the person inside who was here to serve us would have become very, very embarrassed over their human error. And even though I'm not supposed to have salt, it says in the Gemara, Noach lo la'adam la'avir atzmo l'kivshan ha'esh v'na'abim p'necha v'lo barabim. I'd rather risk my life than embarrass somebody. I hope this little lesson sinks in. Because the truth of the matter is, it's difficult for people to change a midah, a character trait. And this is a character issue, not a simple halakha issue. It comes from a weakness in character. And a person has to know what and what they can't do will only be controlled by how you are as a person. A person with good midot, good character traits, will be able to control themselves. And one with weak character traits may even know it's wrong and still not be able to control themselves. So let's work on it. Let's try and improve it.